Welcome to the Growing EBITDA podcast, where we unlock the doors to management and technology insights in the middle market. Join us as we explore innovative strategies to drive revenue and EBITDA growth, interviewing industry leaders and technology experts. Whether you're looking to streamline operations, understand the latest tech trends, or lead your company towards exponential growth, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and let's grow together.
James, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Who sang our intro song?
Ooh.
Do you know this person's name?
I don't think we know. I think producer Matt knows the individual, and you would have to, we'd have to maybe have Matt, producer Matt, as a guest one day on the cast. What do you think?
Someday. You think he's ready?
I think so. Hey, just to make fun of ourselves for a minute, Mike, do you mind if I make fun of us for a second?
That's your best skill set.
I know. We were such newbies. We loaded our, you know, podcast zero as season one, which was our intro. And then we immediately jumped to season two with all of our content. So maybe one day we circle back with having a producer Matt on and we can attach it to season one.
I actually thought that that was the only way we could guarantee getting renewed for a second season. I thought that was part of the plan.
That's true. That's a fair point.
Yeah. I thought that was part of the plan. So, We're talking about integration today, post-acquisition integration, post-merger integration, PMI, goes by many different names. And to get us started today, I want to know, I know mine, I want to know the most interesting place you've ever done an integration. Let's digress for a second here. Tell us a story. I know you got some good ones.
Oh, man. So I'll say I did it. It's this town called, so take you a little bit of a story. I started working for a company that went through a lot of M&A, and I was working out of the Mexico office supporting integration work for companies within the U.S. And one of the acquisitions we did was in Bonham, Texas. And so coming off of that, we had just acquired a group in La Jolla in California, so outside of San Diego. So it was a great integration. We spent a lot of time, beautiful city, great hotels, awesome food. And we go to Bonham, Texas, and we go out to visit the site, and the site had done a nice job of booking a hotel for us, so we didn't have to find a hotel. Number one, we had a fast food restaurant that also doubled as a grocery store for lunch. And then we get to the hotel, and for those that are aware of the hotel, America's Best, which is, you know, not to shame anybody, but America's Worst, it was a pretty bad hotel to the point that, like, really uncomfortable, not a great area. Well, we just, as a team, decided, well, we're not going to stay there again. We'll do it to make the target happy, but we're going to not stay there again. So we commuted an hour and 20 minutes about every single day there and back. So two and a half hours every day to go to this little town to integrate this business. The other memory I have from that business is they took a break every couple hours. It was a manufacturing facility, and they would go and drink Monster by the back door. And I remember I'd never had a Monster before, not something I'd ever had. And it was the old big ones with the screw top, if you remember that one, Mike. Mm-hmm. And so I went through a rough period, man. I went through a Monster phase where I was drinking Monster, driving 2.5 hours, working in the middle of nowhere, Texas. That integration, I was like, I want that La Jolla business back. How do I get to that La Jolla life? So, yeah, man, we don't go to always the best and nicest cities when we're trying to integrate. But I'll tell you, great people.
What's the population of Bonham?
Well, I don't know. You know what? Calling back to another episode, Mike, I'd have to use ChatGPT and some AI to serve up that answer. But I would say great people, man. I also gained a ton of weight because some very hearty meals, cookouts in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, the worse the town, the better the people, I feel. And so it was a great time to make some great contacts. And I still talk to some of those folks today, but not my favorite city by any means. How about you? Actually, can I ask you?
That was such a long answer. We might have to make that its own episode. I didn't know I'd ask for a novel. My favorite, most interesting place I ever did an integration was Rattlesnake Bayou, ooh, Alabama.
Oh, wow.
And let me just, I'll make my story much more brief and just say it lived up to its name. And that was a good one. Rattlesnake Bayou. I don't know who came up with that name, but they named it right. We'll just
look it up right now.
So let's jump in. Let's talk about integrations, and let's talk about where bad integration hurts the most. What usually goes wrong first trials and tribulations, lessons learned. Get us started down that path, James.
Yeah. So I think when we, and you know, to call back to another episode, but to just baseline, Trivista does a lot of work in the PMI space after some M&A event, whether that's private equity, whether that's a large corporation that's a publicly traded entity that's carving out a piece of its business. We deal on both sides. So think carve out in or M&A come together in. So we work on both sides of that. I think where we see some of the challenges and where we're brought in to help a lot of times, or kind of shore folks up because they've already kind of begun the process. Number one is where I buy these two businesses because I like these two businesses. These businesses work well. I don't want to do harm to these businesses. But unfortunately, as I start to bring them together, I may make some decisions that cause some operational disruption or cause challenges to the business. This could be by bad systems. As an IT individual, we see that a lot. This could be operational inefficiencies. Frankly, a lot of times we see you make a sales force change in the field. Let's say you have a field rep team and you make that change. It could disrupt those businesses. So one of the first things you can do is disrupt the two great entities that function today, because we all go into these with the hope that we can drive synergies, become a better business, drive out cost, and become a better combined entity. It can go wrong. The second one, I don't know if we've talked about this one before, Mike. Maybe we should do a future episode on this. There's a recruiting arm at Trivista that helps companies find individuals at executive levels within their practices or firms or companies. And so we actually do a lot of time helping with this challenge, which is the talent flight. So we know when we go in and we do a diligence, we look for key man risk and we indicate those key man risks. But sometimes folks leave, whether it's the team that owned the business and they transition out, or talent at the business because maybe they had a windfall or a good financial outcome due to the transaction, and so they leave. There's a lot of times that talent comes out and then the business is scrambling to figure out how to shore that up, because not only are you trying to get these entities figured out, you're also making up for the talent side. And then the last one is, and this is something maybe you can talk about here in a second from a financial perspective, is this idea of these synergies and these kind of financial synergies. Be going into this deal, no PE firm or no business is going to go into a deal blind. They're going to build a model. They're going to have an expectation of excellence, and they're going to have an expectation of outcome. So you're going to have those conversations up front. You're going to know what you want to do. And if you don't or you can't materialize those kind of changes, whether it's be from the systems, from the team, or from the process, and you can't hit those synergies, at the end of the day, it affects the bottom line. So maybe we could take that, Mike, and maybe that's somewhere you can come in, because you know much more about this than I do, where those kind of poor synergies or bad impacts affect the financials and kind of disrupt the deal a little bit, or at least the idea of what the deal was going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll build on the comment that you made about talent flight. If you lose the wrong people in the business that you're buying, or you disenfranchise some of the folks on the team that you're already running, huge costs can be associated with that, you know, especially if you start losing high performers who think that maybe they weren't involved in kind of the strategic decision-making process behind acquiring this other company. Maybe they feel like they get exposure to comp models now that are very different, and they're kind of realizing that, hey, maybe I should have been making a lot more money than I was all these years. It could be any number of different things. You start losing key people, that's a major hit to the bottom line, right? And that could be at your current company or at the target, you know, the business that you're acquiring. So I think about things like talent flight, like you mentioned. I think about margin erosion. Many times people are going to model in lots of synergies in these deals. They're going to say, hey, look, we're going to bring company A and company B together, and we don't need 15 salespeople anymore. We only need 13. So, you know, we get some headcount reductions and some cost savings. For starters, unless you have a very robust plan, it's pretty simple when you're talking about two salespeople. But when you're talking about larger enterprises, you could be talking about integration synergies across the sales team, the marketing team, the back office, finance, IT, reduction in licenses on the IT side, purchasing power, and trying to drive purchase price reductions, because now you're spending more with certain suppliers. I mean, it could cascade across manufacturing, distribution, really cascade across the whole business. If you don't have really robust kind of day one communication plans, day one implementation and integration plans, if you haven't appointed somebody who's really responsible for waking up every day for the next couple of years and running all those costs out of the business and driving those synergies, you stand to not realize many of the synergies that you expected at the onset, right? And quite frankly, not that I would label this necessarily a crisis, but we have a saying, you know, never waste a crisis, right? Never waste the opportunity when there's a lot of things going on to execute flawlessly, maybe make a couple of mistakes along the way. But if you're going to go and do M&A, and part of the logic is driving for synergies, you better be very focused on driving and achieving those. And I think, you know, one of the things that we find is oftentimes a letdown is that people don't realize as many synergies as they originally modeled. We tend to find that that's oftentimes a function of lack of good old fashioned project planning and tough decision making and, you know, staying on top and holding teams accountable to actually going and doing what we all agreed we were going to do in the first place with these deals. Then you can get into things like customers, where day one planning and even day zero planning is critically important. How are we going to announce this to the market? If it's not well received and one of your largest customers decides, geez, I don't like what's going on over there now, that could be a major revenue and margin hit to the business. So all different kinds of margin erosion if you're not implementing appropriately. You got customer loss, you've got employee challenges, and also, quite frankly, there's a lot of brand damage that can be done, right? And you got to be very thoughtful about brands, right? You may have a brand in your current company. You may be buying a company with a solid brand. Maybe you're buying a company with a weaker brand. Figuring out what the right strategy is to kind of go to market on a go forward basis, being thoughtful about the communication path, actually integrating the tools and the systems so you actually kind of look out in the marketplace as if you're one company now together. Not doing any of those things well, number one, is typically going to drive a lot of cost in the business, but also not doing any of those things well could actually hurt your brand long term or hurt your employee relationships long term or what have you. So a lot of real financial impacts can come out of poor integration. And, you know, we tend to work with a lot of companies that maybe they've done M&A in the past, maybe they haven't done M&A in the past and it's their first time. So in many cases, you could be dealing with management teams that haven't had a lot of experience doing that. And it's important to equip them with the appropriate resources and tool sets with which to execute on them. Because otherwise, why are you making your life that much more complicated in the first place, right? If you're not gonna kind of go after it and attack it aggressively, maybe rethink it.
Yeah, to read another chapter from my novel from earlier for that plant in bottom.
Do we have enough, producer Matt, do we have enough time?
The brand damage side. So this plant at a bottom was acquired by a company out of Mexico, and we manufactured in Bonham, Texas, right? It was a manufacturing facility. And after the acquisition got out, news got to the local area like, oh, they're acquired by a Mexican company. And so the rumor was, oh, well, they're moving all their manufacturing to Mexico, which actually we were moving manufacturing from Mexico to this plant to help with capacity. And so we had done poor planning, poor communication, and poor articulation of that to our clients and did cause some brand damage and actually caused quite a hearty dip in sales. So you are 1,000% correct that that's something that needs to be contemplated and really work through and not just assume that everyone will know.
Yeah, absolutely. So James, I talked about what can go wrong. How do you get it right?
Yeah.
How do you start off on the right foot?
I love what you said, Mike. Day zero planning. A lot of people focus on that first day. There's a lot of upfront work that can happen. One of my favorite things is when clients have us do a diligence on an entity that they plan to acquire and then either bolt on or build as a platform and bring another business together, almost like two platforms coming together. And they call us after that and say, let's get planning. Let's start tomorrow on what this integration looks like. So that early integration planning, starting immediately, even a little bit in due diligence or pretty dang close after diligence, really helps set that tone, really opens up conversation. Obviously, it has to be proxied by legal and make sure it's okay for the deal cycle, how much you share, where you share, why you share, all needs to be reviewed. But you can start a lot of those things in day zero. I think having honest conversations with your leadership team and making sure they're aligned, again, within reason and protected conversations to say, here's our plan, here's what we're doing. Oftentimes I see failed integrations when we're going to do a diligence and part of our diligence is the ownership group is asking us in the diligence, what do you think they're going to do with us after they acquire us? If we hear that question, we know there's a misalignment and probably the message hasn't been shared in the right way. So that management team understands. A lot of times the ownership group understands, but not that middle management team. And then the last one, which is something we always say in any project, which by the way, I love your shout out on poor project management sets you up for poor success. It is 1,000% true. But the other thing is, how do I get quick wins? How do I find things that are very simple? So one of the things that we see a lot of times on a quick win that gets people working together, gets conversations going, and it's a low risk is indirect procurement. Something as silly as like, hey, we all have paper towels. We all buy from Grainger. Let's align on a procurement of indirect that we can make sure we get those materials. We can start to work on that together. Again, it's not going to really super disrupt the business. It's a chance for us to partner. It's a chance for us to figure out a group rate so we can lower some prices. And it's a good place to experiment before you start getting in the tougher things of like, how do I combine manufacturing facilities? How do I centralize my call center? Those are tougher and more kind of frothy challenges, whereas I can get some quick wins, build that confidence on the team, and kind of drive that inertia to those larger challenges like ERP, CRM, or some of the sales things we've discussed on here. So I think those type of things for me is, you know, start talking soon, bring everyone along for the journey, and get some quick wins.
Yep, absolutely. So James, before we wrap up, we got some two-bit trivia, I think, here today.
Ooh, all right. You want to ask or you want me to make up something? You got something already figured out?
Yeah, I prep for these. I prep for these.
No, man. All right, here we go.
You know, chat, my buddy GPT and I, we prep for these.
Yeah, perfect.
So this one's pretty basic. I think you're going to get this one. What's the average timeline that experts recommend to fully integrate an acquired company?
So we preach don't go too quickly because you could break things, the do no harm clause. So I'm going to go probably a year to 18 months time frame. So you still kind of know them, but you're not taking too long. So I don't know, 1 year to 18 months.
Well, even though you're close, this just proves you're not as smart as ChatGPT. But experts say 12 to 24 months. But I think you're close. So we'll give you like two-thirds of a point there. Are we keeping points? Yes. Is that how this system goes?
Well, it's 1 to 2/3 then if we are keeping points, because I do have my little scoreboard here. So
yeah. And I think the logic there is if you're moving faster than that, you're probably not integrating the businesses, right?
Right.
Could be leaving money on the table. Who knows? Depends on the integration. But you certainly probably haven't integrated fully the two companies, or maybe that was more like a tuck-in, maybe about a product line, and you know, 3 or 4 months in, you've got it integrated into your facility. But 12 to 24 months is the guidance, which also I think has been my experience. So good reminder, takes planning. You know, my comment about day zero planning, super important. Day one planning, even more important, making sure that you're engaging the team and holding the team accountable to delivering it.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, this is something that's squarely in our wheelhouse, and we talk to clients all the time. So, hey, if you have a question or want to learn more, reach out to Mike or I directly. We'd appreciate when our listeners listen. When they listen and they reach out, we appreciate both. But thanks for tuning in to
By the way, you're assuming they listen.
Hey, we got numbers now.
Listen or reach out, either one, it's fine. Yeah,
we got numbers. But hey, subscribe to Growing EBITDA, and we look forward to connecting in the next couple weeks.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Growing EBITDA. If you like this episode, hit subscribe or follow us on LinkedIn for updates. Got a topic you'd like us to cover? Drop us a message. We'd love to hear from you.